A. Arakawa is an artist working in sculpture, performance, and more recently, he's been making musicals. In fact, this is Arakawa's first time being interviewed about his songs, which have mostly been overshadowed by his large-scale performances, like the ones he's done at the Tate Turbine Hall and the Museum of Modern Art. Arakawa's music has an amateur's touch to it, and like all his work, it's characterized by collaboration. He's worked with artists as varied as Miho Hattori and Seth Price. He thinks about lyrics the way bards used epic poems, like receptacles for information, with melody as a kind of memory device. In our conversation, we discuss the Gutai Painting Group, the Japanese artificial vocal program called Vocaloid, the pop star Yumi, our mutual friend, the painter Rich Aldrich, and the Fantastics, along with other musicals Arakawa attended in the 90s, all of which helped plant the seeds for the work he would make a few decades later.
So, you know, when I started my art practice, I'm more based performance art. I think I'm coming out of performance art scene of New York City. New York has a lot of performance art history, background, performance art scene, such as Jack Smith, Stuart Sherman, Øyvind Faustrom, Usta Group, so many others. Especially around 2005, Performer Biennale started. A lot of performance happened all over. Around then, I started to perform a lot in the contemporary art galleries. So I did a lot of performance in front of the audience in the gallery space. I didn't really think of about the music. After all those years I'm doing gallery performances, I started to be interested more traditional performance space, which is theater.
How to disappear in America? Destroy all photographs of me. Every trace of my face. Ripped up photos, family died. My life is broken. I'm on the run, get off the grid. Handicap my opposition. Make them use an anti-rendition. Slow them down. Life in shreds. There's no instead. My choice was wrong. Tried my best. Clean each mess. It's been too long.
I was in relationship with my ex-boyfriend, Sergei Cherepnin. He's a composer and artist. Our relationship and collaboration started around 2007, so working with him also informed me a lot about music and sound art, how to make music in relationship with visual art, such as physicality or materiality of sound. I also made a collective with his brother Stefan, who is also a good musician and artist, and I continued making music and melodies with many other composers, Miho Hattori, David Zuckerman, aka Gardener of the Apocalypse, Christian Naujox, and even a few songs with my current partner, Forrest Nash.
And what about when you were a young child? Did you have much of a relationship with music then?
Yes. From, you know, I think when I was 12 years old till still now, I am a fan of this Japanese pop musician. Her name is called Yumi Matsutoya. People call her Yumin. She's like sort of a pioneer of Japanese
pop music. She's been active almost 50 years, and she produced a lot of songs. You know, like she made like over 500 songs. I was in her fan club when I was a teenager, and you know, I spent a lot of time going to her concert many times.
Actually, one very important performance I did in New York City in 2004, the performance related to her, how she was successful as Japanese pop musician in the 80s and 90s Japan. She had a buying power to work with the Western production designer, stage set designer. Same as Rolling Stones, Janet, MTV. I was thinking about the export import of those global pop stages in contrast with my migration status to New York at that time. It is true, I am a big fan of this pop star, so my reference point for melodies comes from my brain digesting over many years of listening You Mean.
Yeah, I feel that in your music. I can feel both the things you're talking about. The musical, as you mentioned, like as a grounding point, really feels like the thing that I keep coming back to. And I think that's because of the way you often use lyrics.
I think in a theater, I think more than contemporary art, we can sort of respond to what's happening in a society very immediate way. Often I work with this lyricist. He's American. His name is Dan Poston. He has a background in creative writing and poetry. The lyrics is always, you know, I think collaboration with him. You know, I'm originally from Japan, so English is not my first language, which I actually like because I have a sort of, you know, imperfect English understanding. So imperfection of this language is very, I am aware it's very interesting. And working with Dan Poston, he knows this dynamics between my language understanding and his language understanding.
Welcome to Hellstrom, don't be afraid of me. I'm a digital painting, stir-like crutches. Now encountering you and this tech body, trumping and post-truth, Erdis Antithide.
Usually we start from the melodies. I like to come up with melody a lot. I think usually I just hold in my phone and, you know, come up with some kind of motif. So I make a humming into a song, into a phone. And then, yeah, maybe sometime I come up with some bridge part with some lyrics idea.
There are many examples of artists who sort of begin with melody and some vague sense of lyrics and then write the lyrics to that. But it's interesting that you work that way. I would have expected the other way with your music because it's so language dominant. Like musicals, the lyrics are so forefront.
True. I think a Dan's tendency is like he's putting a lot of information into a one songs, and you know he also start to play with like some kind of language play. You know, the musical is like a very American culture. I think we understand, oh, in the musical, as long as song is like a very musical style, like a very catchy or very emotional, we can put as much information, as much esoteric information in there.
Why is a melody being catchy important to you?
Maybe opposite of catchy is more like atmospheric. You know, it's like we tried a few songs more like less catchy, but more about like texture, or more about atmosphere, more about the more overall emotional part. But I think I cannot get away from more catchier part because that's where related to how people memorize the certain esoteric information. So it's like a kind of a memorizing device, like people can remember some obscure history about Gutai group or some other information by the form of song. Hello everyone. This installation is based on the activities of Gutai.
I assume everyone here knows what Gutai is. We're a group of painters active in the Kansai area of Japan, near Osaka, from 1954 until 1972.
The leader of Gutai is Jiro Yoshihara, a painter, critic, and also an heir of a salad oil company in Japan. This musical is based on two sources of Gutai interviews, Gutai document and Japanese Art Oral History Archive.
I am Jiro Yoshihara, a leader of Gutai. I am Jiro, but at the same time, I am not Jiro. Every character here is more or less mixed with several people's personalities. So I am Jiro, but not Jiro.
We are all founding members of Gutai. Let's see. We will begin this musical from the year when we build our own art space, called Gutai Pinakotheca. Pinakotheca means gallery in Greek.
We are Pinakotheca. New time, I name it Gutai.
Jumped over Tokyo. We want to reach the Mecca.
Art Unlimited.
How should we explain our groove selves? Ha! Are we one piece or five unique pieces with discount?
We are quasi-artist-run space. Fuh. Relationships are so complicated.
I think also we have a lot of, how to say, it's kind of a funny to be catchy in this way, you know, like when we make songs about very obscure information, often those are the information not so many people care in terms of like Western art history discourse. So when I make Japanese history as a catchy song, that's like a kind of like a, how do you say, tension between like being so obscure and being very popular.
Another track I wanted to talk about was Family Dollar. And that seemed to be a very different style than some of the other tracks. It had this metal quality to it.
Oh. The Family Dollar, it's the first song I worked with this Japanese arranger. I think that's how, you know, I was kind of curious to work with more commercial arranger that time. Partially because, you know, I think the subject of the song is about my family's bankruptcy. So I wanted to contrast very personal misfortune with pseudo commercial quality. You know, the song is only distributed with the sculpture, so it's not like a mass distributed form.
When you say your family's bankruptcy.
Yes.
Can you talk a little more about that?
This family bankruptcy happened during COVID time, but it's already sort of about to happen even before the COVID, because my brother owns tanning salon business in Japan, but it didn't grow very well for a long time. I think that experience also, you know, the house is being sold, and but actually also it's a liberation that you know, my family is released from sort of all those debt. I mean, it's actually still in process of being released, but I think the song is related to, yeah, this bankruptcy in the pandemic. So I thought the metal arrangement was very fitted for this. And you know, of course, I use metal because the structure is shape of coins, you know, shape of money. So the money was singing metal song. That's the sort of setup.
Would you ever want your music to be released like traditional music, where it just stands on its own?
I'm not sure. It's okay to do that, like, you know, like listening a soundtrack of the musical or movie. But yes, original intention was more like a site-specific singing performance. The composers I work with, you know, they often more like a sound art scene. Sometimes they are not so accustomed to making catchy melodies, you know. On the other hand, I don't have much of like pressure to come up with original melodies. You know, again, my sort of music archive is, you know, bunch of like Yumin songs, so I don't, you know, like somehow in my brain, I digest a lot of Yumin songs, and somehow the melody I come up with is a mixture of this Japanese pop music or Japanese cultural music or some other songs I heard in the before, you know, very amateur melody making.
You use the word amateur a few times, and I definitely feel that in the music. There's a quality, a childlike quality to the way the melodies move.
I think there's a several reference point. I think sometime when you go to musical or experience of musical at theater, sometimes it's very amateur in a way. It's not like you listen the final product from streaming or CDs, you know.
Try to remember the kind of September when life was slow and oh so mellow. Try to remember the kind of September when grass was green and grain was yellow. Try to remember the kind of September.
Actually, I saw musical made by Eri Watanabe in the early 90s. That's like a very amateur musical. It's a Japanese theater group, so it's like less known. She had a musical theater called Sanjumaru.
Shiawase sagashite kita keredo sora ni mangetsu hikaru dake anata atashi o suki kashira shindemo ii to oshiatte.
You know, you and me know this painter, Richard Aldrich. He once gave me a MP3 of two amateur singers called Jim and Jonathan singing some American folk music. I think some of the, I don't know, trolls. I like those quality of very raw singing quality. I think those are the some of the references, I think.
Get you a copper kettle, get you copper coil, cover with new made corn mash, and never more you'll toil. You just lay there by the juniper while the moon shines bright.
I think I'm counting on music as sort of a almost like a blood saturation of a sculpture I make. I've been making LED-based sculptures since 2016. And you know, LED is more like a handmade monitor, you know, so it's like a kind of, they're just projecting a JPEG image. I consider those LED sculpture as almost like a sculpture/performer. They have to speak something in order to be alive, in order to be performative. So in that way, songs are sort of like the way for them to perform repeatedly for longer period of time without me being there. So it's like, without the song, some of the structure is not enough as a structure. I think it's like a tension between like object, being of object, and also being as a performer.
Would you discard all your family? Would you discard all your friends? Would you discard your whole way of life? How to disappear in America?
You know, I think my inspiration often comes from, like, you know, being a performance artist. So it's like a kind of self-referential, you know, like referring to this medium is always very productive to me, both historically, but also personally too. I think that's why last 5 years, the songmaking was very natural for me to sort of involve. Next couple project, I'm interested more like a Vocaloid now. Instead of using my own voice, I want to work with artificial voice.
It's interesting you say that. I've just finished an entire album with Vocaloid.
Oh, Vocaloid industry is very big in Japan. I think because of cultural reason.
The way you're talking about it, it sounds as if you see all of the work as continuous and part of the same project.
Yes, I cannot get away from being a performance artist. Yeah, everything connecting with performativity.
Do you want to get away from performance art?
No, actually not really, but it's more like I never try to quit, but I think it's just keep happening as I keep living.
Thanks for listening to Subject Object Verb, presented by Artwork. I'm your host, Ross Simonini. Talk to you soon.